Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
stocks in Asia surge following yesterday's Wall Street rally.
Investors look for clues on whether the Fed will open the door to an interest rate cut.
The Fed signals laws on its side as President Trump tries to remove Chairman Powell.
President Trump decries illegal mass migration at his re-election kickoff rally. Plus, the Trump administration weighs new sanctions on Turkey. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Another Yankee win over Tampa Bay to increase their division lead. A lopsided Mets win in Atlanta.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good morning. I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And futures this morning are a little change. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down about 3 points. Dow futures down 28. NASDAQ futures down 2.5. The DAX in Germany down about 0.1%. 10-year Treasury down 5/32, yield 2.07%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.88%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.2% or 12 cents at $53.78 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.33% or $5 to $13.4570. Ounce, and the euro 1.1199 against the dollar. The yen 108.42. John.
In 9 hours and counting to the highly anticipated Fed decision, and more importantly, clues to whether policymakers signal a readiness to lower interest rates. We begin our Fed coverage with Bloomberg's Michael McKee.
President Trump may have tweeted the Fed out of an overly dovish decision, announcing a G20 meeting with China's president next week. A rate cut wouldn't affect the trade policies weighing on the U.S. economy, but a trade deal might mitigate the need for Fed action. So waiting now makes sense. Still, given market expectations, the central bank has to do something. They may replace patience in their statement with a promise to carefully monitor economic developments and act as appropriate. What's not clear is how they adjust the dot plot, a reason to tune in for the decision. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And as Mike mentioned, the key event for investors will be what clues the Fed will leave about the future of interest rates. We recently spoke with Morgan Stanley Chief U.S. Economist Ellen Zentner on Bloomberg Daybreak.
Promising again what they've already done in public, that we're watchful, we're on heightened alert. They take out the word patience. They say that we're basically ready to act should there be material downside risk. And that risk event, you know, could be the outcome from the G20.
And live coverage of the Fed decision and Powell news conference begins at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on both Bloomberg radio and television.
And the Fed is making clear it thinks the law is on its side if President Trump tries to remove Jerome Powell as Federal Reserve chairman. Bloomberg's Patrice Acura continues our Fed coverage this morning.
Sources say White House lawyers have equipped Trump with a possible blueprint for demoting Powell by stripping him of his chairmanship and leaving him as only a governor. But the Fed has hinted for the second time that it won't back down easily. Fed spokeswoman Michelle Smith said the chair can, quote, only be removed for cause. The Federal Reserve Act provides explicit protection for all Fed governors against removal by the president except for cause. Courts have interpreted the phrase to require proof of some form of legal misconduct or neglect of basic duties. A disagreement over monetary policy would not meet that bar. Patrice Sikora, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Patrice, thank you. Meanwhile, the president will meet with China's Xi Jinping in Japan next week to continue trade negotiations. Trump talked about it as he relaunched his presidential bid in Orlando last night.
I spoke to President Xi, terrific president, a great leader of China. Spoke to him this morning at length, and we'll see what happens. But we're either going to have a good deal and a fair deal, or we're not going to have a deal at all, and that's okay, too.
And prospects of a Trump-Xi meeting not only sparked yesterday's U.S. stock rally, it fueled gains across Asian markets. We get the recap from Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in Singapore.
Good morning, John and Karen. The MSCI Asia-Pacific Index had its biggest one-day gain since early January, while the onshore yuan touched its highest level since May the 27th. The Hang Seng Index actually had its biggest one-day gain since December. Elsewhere, Australian stocks neared all-time highs, although the relative strength index is showing equities down under and now now in overbought territory. Sovereign bonds in the region also rose amid the anticipated dovish turn from central banks, which was reaffirmed by ECB President Mario Draghi. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. The trade war may be having an impact on Apple. The Nikkei is reporting Apple has asked its largest suppliers to consider the feasibility of shifting 50% to 30% of its output from China to Southeast Asia. The paper says Apple sees risk of relying on China as too much.
In Europe, Boris Johnson is extending his lead in the race to become Britain's next prime minister. Let's get the very latest live from Bloomberg's Sebastian Salek in London. Sebastian, good morning.
Good morning, John and Karen. Five candidates remain after former Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab was knocked out yesterday. He was the hardest Brexiteer in the contest, and Boris Johnson looks poised to pick up more votes as a result. The contenders clashed in a TV debate last night, but it's back to the ballot box today, where the one with the fewest votes will be eliminated. Once Conservative MPs have whittled the list down to two, those names will be put to the party membership next month. Live in London, I'm Sebastian Salek, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Sebastian, thank you. The stockpile of negative-yielding bonds across the world has now surged past $12 trillion. It follows comments from ECB President Mario Draghi that more monetary easing could be on the horizon. Yesterday, French 10-year yields fell to zero for the first time, while Swedish and Austrian benchmarks turned negative. That pushed the value of bonds around the world with sub-zero yields to $12.5 trillion, the highest daily tally on record.
And pilots and flight attendants, who may have been critical of Boeing's handling of the beleaguered 737 MAX, will air their concerns today with lawmakers. They're scheduled to testify before a U.S. House Aviation panel investigating the two crashes that killed a total of 346 people. The tragedies led to the worldwide grounding of the jet.
Bankrupt California utility PG&E has reached a $1 billion settlement with local government agencies over wildfires. The company's equipment was blamed for starting the fires. The agreement doesn't affect any of the billions of dollars of suits PG&E faces filed by homeowners and businesses harmed by the blazes.
And OPEC has agreed to hold its next meeting to discuss oil output cuts on the first 2 days of July, resolving a month-long dispute that highlighted divisions within the group. We have NYMEX crude down 10 cents right now at 53.80. This is Bloomberg. And it's 5:07 on Wall Street. Time for news from around the world. And we say good morning to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, John. President Trump officially announced his campaign for re-election last night, delivering a grievance-filled speech in which he warned of a dark future for America if his opponents win in 2020. Speaking in Orlando, Florida last night, the president says Democrats would strip Americans of their rights.
As we fight to make life better for all Americans, the Democrat Party has become more radical, more dangerous, and more unhinged than at any point in the modern history of our country.
Democrats are accusing President Trump of jumping from one border crisis fix to the next just to score political points with his supporters. Bloomberg's Bob Moon has the latest.
Just ahead of his re-election kickoff, Trump orders yet another immigration crackdown.
When people come into our country and they come in illegally, they have to go out.
Vowing millions will be rounded up and sent home starting next week. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer says this is no coincidence, this is playing politics.
Every day is a new policy.
Democrats propose going after so-called coyotes, taking advantage of these people, Schumer says.
That's a policy that would work.
But Trump said he was interested, then withdrew the money for it. Whipping up his supporters, Schumer complains, while sensible immigration reform bills are going nowhere. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Former White House Communications Director Hope Hicks is poised to become the Democrats' first big witness today as the House Judiciary Committee interviews her behind closed doors. Democratic Congresswoman Madeline Dean of Pennsylvania says during her tenure, Hicks would have seen the interaction between the campaign and Russia.
Hope Hicks had a front row seat to an awful lot of what is the subject of the Mueller report and the subject of our oversight. She worked not only on the campaign, she was part of the transition and then came inside to the White House.
The Trump administration is weighing three sanctions packages to punish Turkey over its purchases of the Russian S-400 missile defense system. That's according to people familiar with the matter who say the most severe package would all but cripple the already troubled Turkish economy. Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan decided not to move forward with the confirmation process to take the job permanently. The White House has named Secretary of the Army Mark Esper to be the new acting defense secretary. Global news 24 hours a day. On Air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. 5:09 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
John, the Yankee lineup is almost intact. Gone are the days of scrambling to find bodies to put in the outfield. First, Aaron Hicks returned. Now, Giancarlo Stanton is back. And Aaron Judge is getting ready, maybe for this weekend. Where does that leave Cameron Maybin, who the Yanks acquired when they were desperate for an outfielder? Last night, he homered as the Yanks again beat Tampa Bay at Stadium 6-3. Maybin has now homered in four straight games.
Got to give a lot of credit to Marcus and PJ for, you know, just working me in the cage. And, you know, Boney and the coaching staff continue to just believe in me. I'm thankful that I'm here. I'm enjoying it, every moment of it. And I just want to continue to be a piece of the puzzle and continue to play good baseball.
Played three games all season, went 0-for-4 in his return. The new Yank, Edwin Encarnacion, homered. He leads the American League with 22. Jay Happ got his seventh win. Yanks go for the sweep this afternoon. They now lead the Rays by 2.5 games. Easy win for the Mets, 10-2 in Atlanta. Pete Alonso led the way. Four hits, including his 24th home run.
Thankfully, he threw me a fastball up, and again, I capitalized, and I just stayed within myself and didn't really chase at any of the pitcher's pitches.
Michael Conforto, Jeff McNeil also went yard. Plenty of support for Jacob DeGrom, who had a shutout until the ninth inning. He struck out 10. The NBA draft is tomorrow night in Brooklyn. The Knicks have the third pick. The Atlanta Hawks game calling, offering the 8th and 10th picks for the third. Knicks said no, believed to have their sights set on Duke's R.J. Barrett. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. John?
All right, John, thanks a lot. And ahead of today's Fed decision, we have futures right now in the U.S. They are mixed. S&P futures down about a point. Let's call that unchanged right now. The Dow futures down 9 points. The Nasdaq E-mini futures up about 4 points right now. We have the euro 111. That is up slightly against the U.S. dollar. Japanese yen, that's flat at 108.44. And as we check yields, the 10-year yield in the U.S., 2.07%. That is up just at one basis point. The price is down right now by 5/32. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Crude oil lower this morning. Where is it headed from here? Just up, we'll talk to Stephen Shork of the Shork Report. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Farron Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are little changed this morning while European shares and treasuries slip as investors await the conclusion of the latest Federal Reserve meeting, with anticipation growing that policymakers will signal a readiness to lower rates. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are down 2 points, Dow futures down 15, Nasdaq futures up 1.5, the DAX in Germany down 0.1%. 10-year treasury down 5/32, yield 2.07%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.88%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.2% or 11 cents to $53.78 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.4% or $5 to $13.4570 an ounce. The euro 1.1198 against the dollar, and the yen 108.42. The Fed releases its interest rate decision at 2 o'clock Wall Street time. Barnes & Noble and Oracle are among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. President Donald Trump has officially kicked off his reelection campaign with a Florida rally. The president in Orlando last night says he has been under assault from the very first day of his presidency by a fake news media and illegal witch hunt that had tried to keep him and his supporters down. The Trump administration is weighing 3 sanctions packages to punish Turkey over its purchases of the Russian S-400 missile defense system. The discussions reflect just how badly relations between the U.S. and Turkey, two NATO allies, have soured in recent years. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets won. The A's beat the Orioles 16-2. The Red Sox and Giants lost. The Nationals game was postponed. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. Coming up on 5:20 on Wall Street, we're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. OPEC has agreed to hold its next meeting to discuss oil output cuts on the first 2 days of July. Let's dive into the energy markets this morning with our first guest, Stephen Shork of the Shork Report. Stephen, they've actually had a dispute over when to hold the meeting. I wonder to what extent does this show there are deep divisions within the group?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. How are we going to get any sort of consensus on what to do with oil?
If they can't agree when to meet.
Exactly. So at this point, we're expecting the status quo. That is to say, we'll get the obligatory nod to extend the production cuts going forward. But by the same token, OPEC, and when I say OPEC, I'm really talking about Saudi Arabia, are more concerned with regard to the demand side. The narrative has changed over the past 6 months. Back in the fall and the end of last year, the concern was about supply. The reestablishment of sanctions with Iran, the situation with Venezuela, the civil unrest in Libya. But now the narrative has completely changed over to demand. So as the old saying on Wall Street goes, I could give my customer a haircut every single month. I can only scalp them once. So OPEC is in the position now of maintaining the fact that they still want to give their customers haircuts. That is to say, they want to keep oil prices in a certain range that's not going to be an impact on an economy, a global economy, that's already pretty shaky at this point. So we'll get the obligatory status quo nod, but at the same time, we're going to see a market that will remain well-supplied with oil. To that point, we've had a 10% rally in the U.S. dollar off of its 2018 lows. The dollar is now at a 2018 high, a two-year high. OPEC gets paid in dollars. A strong dollar is an incentive to continue to put product onto the market. So while we'll get some slightly to the right hawkish rhetoric about price unity, do not expect the world to go short of oil anytime in the nearby future.
Does OPEC not realize that there might be a global slowdown?
And that's the concern. Right now, to this point, I do believe Saudis and OPEC, look, they're economists. I've worked with them. They're very in tune with the global demand picture. And certainly the feedback that they give their member countries is taking heed. So I do think that they are concerned. But, of course, we now have the geopolitical headlines, the ongoing belligerence between the United States and Iran, of course, underscored by the start of the tanker wars, or I should say the restart from the 1980s of the tanker wars. So certainly there are known unknowns out there, the potential black swan events for a disruption by an outside player. But at the same point, OPEC cannot drive prices too much higher. I think we are at the bottom of the market. Market is looking at a bottom. It's the summer here. We're in the peak demand season. I do expect demand to be stout.
Yeah.
So certainly I think the market's looking for a bottom at this point, which will help quell any of the real hawks within the producer group.
That's the demand side. In your report, you highlight the fact that there's been an increase in Permian, and that's going to lead to the U.S. shale production to, what, another record?
Yeah, that's absolutely all indications that over the next 2 months, the United States will continue to lead the world in crude oil production. We saw it even in the fourth quarter when prices tanked from about $70 to below $50. Production remains stout. This is because producers are very active in hedging every time oil gets above that $55 to $60 range. So that should tell you where the producer enjoys oil prices at this point. So the United States right now, as I like to say to clients, you cannot swing a cat in the United States without hitting a barrel of crude oil. The United States is well stocked with oil. And we're starting to see it, John, in the spread action. If we look at the ICE Brent market, the difference between the price for December 2019 and December 2020, a key indication, that spread is behaving in a manner over the past 2 months, which indicates that the global market is well supplied with oil.
Okay, so give us your prediction of how the time frame of your own choosing for NYMEX and Brent in about 30 seconds.
Sure, absolutely. So Brent right now, according to our quant models, as I said, I do think we are searching at the bottom here in the mid to low 50s. That's not to say, of course, quants can be wrong and the market can tank, but I think it would take something catastrophic in the economy for that to occur. So as demand picks up through the remainder of this month, July, August, I would expect to see WTI prices migrate back to the high 50s into even the low 60s. Conversely, with Brent, of course, there was a premium there. So I would expect to see Brent drift higher back into the high 60s through the end of the summer.
Stephen, always a pleasure. We appreciate it. Stephen Shork of The Shork Report. We have NYMEX crude right now down 6 cents a barrel. That's down about a tenth. We're at 53.84 a barrel. And Brent, which is the international benchmark, down 36 cents a barrel. That's down about 0.6%. Right now, Brent at 61.79 a barrel. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And as we await a decision from the Fed today, markets, equity markets seem to be on hold. S&P futures down just 2 points. The Dow futures 15 points lower. This is Bloomberg.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are little changed to lower this morning ahead of this afternoon's Fed decision. European averages are lower. Stocks in Asia surged following yesterday's Wall Street rally, which saw the S&P 500 close within 1% of its all-time high. The yield on the 10-year Treasury is currently at 2.07%.
As for the Fed, while a rate cut is not expected today, futures suggest the Fed could cut rates by July. Bloomberg's Benny Daljudice reports.
Bloomberg Economics says Fed Chair Jerome Powell is walking a fine line as market sentiment shifts toward rate cuts. The Fed Chair holds a news conference following a policy session, and Bloomberg Economics says Powell will probably repeat the Fed is ready to ease if need be. Central bankers might even issue a more dovish policy statement. Bloomberg Economics says Powell is also keeping an eye on the risks posed by cutting rates, financial stability risks. Too much punch for the punch bowl. Listen for the policy statement at 2 p.m. Wall Street time and Powell's news conference at 2:30. Vinny Daljudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And again, live coverage begins at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on both Bloomberg Radio and television.
Falling airfares and car prices saw U.K. inflation return to the Bank of England's target last month. Consumer prices rose 2% from a year earlier.
And the U.S. and China confirmed the presidents will meet in Japan next week to relaunch trade talks after a month-long stalemate.
The Nikkei is reporting Apple is mulling shifting 15 to 30% of its output from China. The paper says Apple sees risking of relying on China as too much.
Shares of Adobe up more than 4%. The Photoshop maker's quarterly revenue topped Wall Street estimates.
And today we will get earnings from another big tech company. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
The main highlight of Oracle's results may be strong demand for cloud applications. Bloomberg Intelligence notes Salesforce.com, Workday, and SAP have all reported solid demand for their cloud applications. Growth in Oracle's infrastructure segment will likely be muted, and investors will be interested in any comments about new database adoption. Analysts think Oracle will post an adjusted profit of $1.07 a share on revenue topping $10.9 billion. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. S&P futures are down 2 points this morning. Dow futures down 15. NASDAQ futures down about 3. The 10-year Treasury down 5/32nd, yield 2.07%. And the yield on the 2-year, 1.88%. NYMEX crude oil, little changed at 53.89 a barrel. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Karen, thanks. 5:33 on Wall Street. Time for news from around the world. And we say good morning once again to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, John. It was a flashback to the 2016 presidential campaign. President Donald Trump kicked off his reelection bid at a rally in Orlando, Florida last night. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
He led up to the announcement by picking a new campaign slogan.
Keep America great.
And then in rally fashion from Keep America Great.
We're going to keep it better than ever before. And that is why tonight I stand before you to officially launch my campaign for a second term as President of the United States. Thank you.
In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The president talked about the wall being built at the southern border by the end of next year.
Illegal mass migration brings in millions of low-wage workers to compete for jobs, wages, and opportunities against the most vulnerable Americans, cutting off their path to the American dream.
He also says Democrats would strip Americans of their rights if they win in 2020. Senator Bernie Sanders says Trump is attacking Democratic rivals out of anger over recent polling numbers.
I can understand that he attacks me or other Democratic candidates because poll after poll is showing the country that Trump is falling further behind in terms of his ability to get reelected.
One of the president's former closest advisors, Hope Hicks, will testify before the House Judiciary Committee today behind closed doors. Democratic Congresswoman Madeline Dean of Pennsylvania says Hicks had a front row seat to several subjects in the Mueller report.
Shortly after the election, when asked about Russia's connections to the campaign, Hope Hicks says there were no connections to Russia during the campaign. Well, that contradicts completely what the Mueller report says.
President Trump has ordered Hicks to stay silent on her time at the White House. The Trump administration is weighing three sanctions packages to punish Turkey over its purchases of the Russian S-400 missile defense system, according to people familiar with the matter. The sanctions would put pressure on an already strained Turkish economy. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. Coming up on 5:36 on Wall Street, time now for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And here's John Stashower.
John, in two games this week, the Yankees have added or added back to their lineup two right-handed hitting sluggers who combined to hit 707 career home runs. They traded for Edwin Encarnacion. He homered last night, number 402 in his career. He had hit a league-leading 21 this season while in Seattle. And last night, the return of Giancarlo Stanton, who's been out since the first week of the season. Yanks beat the Rays for the second straight night, 6-3. Cameron Maben homered for the fourth straight game. And oh, by the way, another right-handed hitting slugger, Aaron Judge, could be in the lineup this weekend. Stanton 0-for-4 in his return, talked about taking it slow.
We're just going to listen to the body, says, see how we go the first bit. I still only played 9 innings once in the past 6-7 weeks, so no matter how physically ready, you know, once you get out there and play, start playing games, you don't know how it's going to bounce back. So just ease in the first week or two and then go from there.
Day game today, Yanks going for the sweep. A night after losing 12-3, the Mets won 10-2 in Atlanta. They scored plenty of runs for Jacob DeGrom, who had a shutout until the ninth inning. Home runs for Michael Conforto, Jeff McNeil, and the 24th of the year for Pete Alonso. Looking ahead tonight.
Time to get a series tomorrow. I mean, it's been not what we wanted so far, but we need to do whatever we can to get momentum. And today was a good day, and let's get a series tomorrow.
It was the first four-hit game of Alonso's career. Al Horford opted out of his contract in Boston, so he'll hit the NBA free agent market. The Celtics are believed to also be losing Kyrie Irving. Most feel he's going to sign with the Nets. Brooklyn hosts the NBA draft tomorrow night. With a Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. John?
All right, John, thank you. 5:38 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with a cover on the U.S. purging Chinese Americans from cancer research. Also in this week's issue, the world's largest drone maker is setting its sights on the ground. Jeff Musk has edited the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
DJI, which anybody who's walked through a Target probably recognizes as the maker of these kind of quadcopter, little flying helicopter drones, now is trying to expand into ground warfare with these kinds of DIY $500 tanks called the RoboMaster S1.
You can read about more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. Also, listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time right here on Bloomberg Radio. Where it's 5:39 on Wall Street. Time now for the Tri-State Business Report. And for that, we're joined live by Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, John. New York Senate has passed the state's own version of the Green New Deal, a climate bill that will set the most aggressive clean energy target in the country, more than triple the state's solar capacity and unleash wind power off the coast. Legislation is expected to clear the Democratic-led Assembly as soon as tomorrow. New Jersey lawmakers are pitching a $38.7 billion spending plan that lacks the millionaire's tax that Governor Phil Murphy insists must be in effect starting July 1st. Their budget bill also got rid of Murphy's taxes on corporations and opioid manufacturers and the $317 million rainy day fund deposit. Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont has signed legislation increasing the age to buy cigarettes and other tobacco products to 21. It also prohibits the sale of electronic cigarettes and vaping products to those under that age. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. John?
5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WBBM in Chicago, pilots and flight attendants get their turn today to air concerns over the embattled Boeing 737 MAX.
I'm Joan Doniger telling WCBS listeners New York has passed its own version of a Green New Deal.
I'm Caroline Hepke on Bloomberg DAB, digital radio in London. We're reporting on the drop in UK inflation, potentially giving the Bank of England room to hold rates and the continuing race for the new Prime Minister.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, I'm reporting on a change that could help generic drug makers such as Teva Pharmaceuticals get their lower-cost drugs on the market faster.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Permian driller WPX Energy is open to selling its massive water business in the basin or taking it public.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting sources tell Bloomberg General Motors wants to hire more temporary workers at U.S. plants and cut its health care costs.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And U.S. stock futures this morning pretty much on hold ahead of today's Federal Reserve policy decision. We'll have live coverage here on Bloomberg Radio and Bloomberg Television starting at 2 Wall Street time.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures, little change this morning. European stocks are slipping. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 1.5 points this morning. Dow futures down 7. NASDAQ futures, little change. DAX in Germany up 0.1% now. 10-year Treasury down 5/32. Yield 2.07%. Yield on the 2-year 1.88%. NYMEX crude oil is little change, down 3 cents at $53.87 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.4% or $5.20 at $13.45.50 an ounce. The euro, 1.1201 against the dollar. The yen, 108.44. The Federal Reserve releasing an interest rate decision at 2 o'clock Wall Street time today. And we're also looking for earnings today from companies including Barnes & Noble and Oracle. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Donald Trump has kicked off his reelection campaign for the presidency with a grievance-filled rally. Last night in Orlando, Florida, President Trump told his supporters, Democrats want to destroy you and they want to destroy our country. Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris says that the U.S. would rejoin the Iran nuclear agreement if she were elected president. Harris told MSNBC President Trump's decision to withdraw from the 2015 pact was not smart and he does not appreciate his power. San Francisco officials voted to ban the sale of e-cigarettes in the city by next year. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets won. The A's beat the Orioles 16-2. The Red Sox and Giants lost. The Nationals game was postponed. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. 5:49 on Wall Street. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. Time now to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. And we're joined live by Jen Ryan, Bloomberg Opinion editor in our London Bureau. And Jen, we had some extraordinary comments from the European Central Bank President Mario Draghi yesterday, and President Trump weighed in on those comments and the results of those comments. And Marcus Ashworth writes this morning that maybe the president of the U.S. has a point here.
Yeah, so here's what Marcus is looking at. Draghi has set a spectacularly low bar for additional stimulus for the euro area economy. So then Trump takes to Twitter to complain that the drop in the euro against the dollar makes it unfairly easier for Europe to compete against the USA. So Marcus's point is that, you know, Mario Draghi and ECB policymakers are really in a bind. And what Trump has managed to do is highlight a substantial risk to the region's economy, a stronger euro. And so however much the ECB is at pains to stress that the value of the euro lies outside its remit, the level that it's at is really never going to be very far from their minds.
So what can the ECB policymakers actually do to boost inflation and the economy at this point?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question because the prospect of actually restarting QE seems particularly fraught because it's going to take a lot to renegotiate it with the Eurozone central bankers. So the quicker and easier route is to lower borrowing costs, and negative rates have been around for a long time already. So from that perspective, it's kind of hard to have a lot of faith in them fixing the ECB's inflation problem. But what they can do is prevent the euro from rising, because if the euro gets substantially stronger, this is really going to choke off any chance of Europe's export-led economy recovering from what has turned out to be a pretty prolonged slump.
Ashworth also says that any action might be for nothing, actually.
I mean, the brutal reality is that you've got a global disinflationary environment. So any additional monetary stimulus is really going to have very little impact on boosting European inflation. I mean, the omens are not good. If you look at what's been happening with bond yields lately, Germany and France dropping further into negative territory, this is not exactly a vote of confidence. So Ashworth's final point is that the single currency is crying out, as it has been for a very long time, for a proper fiscal policy. But however, politicians seem absolutely determined to wait for another crisis before galvanizing a credible response.
Okay, next up, our next piece, the race to replace Theresa May as the UK Prime Minister. The Conservative Party held a leadership debate last night, and Trace Raphael says the event says it's all about the state of the Tories at this point.
Exactly. So, you know, you've got a Tory leadership contest debate. So perhaps you might hope that this will give us a clue as how Britain's next prime minister, perhaps Boris Johnson, is going to solve this Brexit impasse, perhaps give everyone some kind of sense of the direction in which the party will be led. And the sad truth is that there is disappointment all around on both these counts. Raphael's view of how the debate turned out was that the candidates provided a very stellar reminder of why the party is really struggling to hold itself together. And it's hard to think of a single memorable idea that was pressed home. The candidates talked over each other. They sought to squeeze in prepared lines. And the members of the public who were asking the questions looked either unimpressed or outright disgusted.
But the real audience that matters may be the Conservative Party leadership, right?
That's right. But the problem we've got now is that this membership is really far from conservative. A YouGov poll of members suggested that they would be happy for Brexit to take place, even if it meant Scotland leaving the Union, the party falling apart, significant damage to the UK economy, and even if Brexit comes at the cost of losing power to Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn. It's possible that any of these views would soften if any of these hypotheticals had a chance of becoming real. But the problem is now no serious contender for the role of party leader can afford to gamble on this.
Okay, what does she make of Johnson's main message, believe in Brexit? Give me like 15 seconds here.
The dogma that's encapsulated in this phrase is really quite shocking. And she says it shows you how much the party has changed, because what the Tories used to be known for is seeking out compromise and eschewing ideology. The one thing which all the candidates can agree on was that none of them want to hold a general election. But, you know, what the moderator said at the debate last night is that sounds like fear.
Jen, thanks a lot. You can read more on this and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion and on the Bloomberg Terminal by typing OPIN Go. Karen.
John, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Facebook will likely have to explain its new cryptocurrency project to Congress after lawmakers from both parties raised concerns after its announcement. Generic drug makers such as Teva Pharmaceutical and Mylan Pharmaceuticals could get their lower-cost drugs on the market faster under a change to the FDA's patent certification program. And a group of congressional Democrats want the federal government to account for its hiring practices of disabled workers. They're concerned it is failing to hire and retain employees with targeted disabilities and missing diversity goals.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Steve, thank you. Now other legal news we're watching this morning. The White House explored the legality of demoting Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell in February, soon after President Trump talked about firing him, according to Bloomberg sources in a Bloomberg exclusive story. Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks to Cornell Law School professor Robert Hockett for more on the story.
Bob, can he legally demote the Fed chair?
No, he cannot, June. We talked about this, of course, a little bit before in connection with just outright firing him or removing him. The demotion question is a little bit different than the removal question, but hardly different at all. The Federal Reserve Act itself is very clear that Federal Reserve Board members can only be removed for cause. So they're appointed to 14-year terms with the advice and consent of the Senate. They're removable only for cause, and cause is widely understood not to include mere disagreements over policy. And of course, it would be almost impossible for things to be otherwise, right? Because the whole point of having the Fed sort of instituted as an administrative agency, the whole point of treating the central bank as something that ought to be independent is precisely in order to allow for independence. And if a president could simply remove Fed board members just because of disagreements with policy, there would be no independence at all on the part of the Fed. So that's the story when it comes to just removal of a board member altogether. Now, the demotion question amounts to almost the same thing for the following reason. Up until the late 1970s, the president could simply choose any given board member and just designate that board member as the chair. And insofar as the president could do that, it might be thought to sort of stand to reason as a matter of symmetry that, you know, if the president can arbitrarily choose the chair from among the board members, then perhaps the president can also arbitrarily de-designate a particular board member as chair and replace that person by another Fed board member. One might have thought something like that. But in the late 1970s, Congress introduced additional legislation amending the Federal Reserve Act, requiring that the Senate have the advise and consent role with respect to the naming of the chair to a four-year term and the vice chair to a four-year term as well. And we generally understand a position that requires the advice and consent of the Senate to fill as carrying with it an implied for cause only restriction when it comes to sort of demoting or removing the person from that particular role. So in that sense, you know, sort of demoting Powell to a mere board member from being the chair looks almost to be the same kind of thing as a removal would be.
And that's Cornell Law School professor Robert Hockett speaking to Bloomberg's June Grosso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. S&P futures are little changed this morning. Dow futures up 3, NASDAQ futures up 3, and the 10-year Treasury down 6/32, yield 2.08%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.